I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Playing cops and robbers is just part of normal childhood, right? Or should we be more concerned about what children learn through these games? This hour we'll discuss how exposure to violence affects the way kids express their feelings and how parents can explain violence in the news to young children. We'll also examine what's normal and what's not when it comes to preschoolers, superheroes, and gunplay. It's Up to Date, following this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Moms and dads all over the metro have asked themselves these questions for years. How normal is it for preschoolers and young children to play superheroes and shoot play guns? In an era of heightening gun violence, especially shootings at schools, should we discourage kids from pretending to shoot each other? Or are such actions signs of normal development? Later on this hour, a first look at the big ballot proposal in Jackson County aimed at boosting life sciences. But first up, kids and guns. Our guest today is Robert Harrington. He's a professor of psychology and research and education at the University of Kansas. His work focuses on developmental appropriateness, anger control, bullying, and violence. He joins us this morning from the studios of Kansas Public Radio in Lawrence. Bob, welcome. So nice to have you.
Nice to be here, Steve.
How difficult of an issue is this, Bob, you know, for parents who want to raise good kids who know how to play appropriately and kids who aren't prone to violence? Just how big of an issue is this for them?
Well, I think it's always a big issue for parents. They're caught in the middle between, should I allow my child to have access to weapons or even play in a violent way? Should I allow them to watch TV that might be violent?
Yeah.
Should I allow them to be around other kids who might be violent? So these are big questions that the parents have to deal with all the time.
So if a kid, you know, a boy or a girl for that matter, plays with guns, is that an indicator that a child, this is a child who's going to be prone to violent behavior down the road?
No, I don't think that alone would be a sign that a child is going to be prone to violent behavior down the road. I think, like so many other things, a child's proclivities have a lot to do with how a parent manages them. Hmm. So if a parent has a child who's prone toward violence and they tend to focus on that violence and, as a matter of fact, maybe even see no problems with it and even maybe model some of that violence themselves – that's probably going to be a problem. But on the other hand, if a child is engaging in some violent play, as boys may do, boys tend to do that more than girls. Girls can do it too. That doesn't necessarily mean that child is going to turn out badly. What it means is that child is really asking for some more help on understanding, how do I handle aggressiveness and these feelings that I have towards other people? You might call it temperament.
Yeah. So I guess the big question here, you know, how do you counsel parents who ask you about how appropriate it is for my 5-year-old to be running around and playing with a toy gun? What do you tell them?
Well, what I tell them is, first of all, you know, parenting is somewhat individual. And so, if you go into Walmart or many stores today, it's kind of hard to even find guns, if you will. I mean, when I was growing up, there were lots of cowboy-type guns and holsters and all that type of thing.
But not as many today.
But not as many today, no. And
that's
the ones that you see today don't look like real guns. They're orange, they're purple, they're different sizes, we hope. So they don't look like real guns, and that is a good thing. I think the other thing about the guns is that how do kids play with these? How do kids play with the guns? I mean, is it a case of are they using them for competition? Like, for instance, it is possible to use, you know, a gun in terms of target practice, possibly. Yeah. Even darts can be used that way. Sometimes dads or moms will use weapons and teach kids about hunting in that way. So that might be something. The other thing is sometimes kids need to know about weapons because mom or dad is going to be called off to a war, perhaps Afghanistan or Iraq and so forth. And I have worked with parents where they're so afraid to talk about guns and what they do that they will actually head off to war, never tell their child that they're heading off to war, and then the child thinks they've been abandoned.
You know, all this conversation just brings back memories for me. I'm thinking about my own boys when they were little and my oldest son getting a toy gun that resembled a real gun. And we don't have guns in our house. And I just remember thinking, you know, as a parent, you get so concerned. This gun looks so realistic that if a police officer drove by, holy smokes, what's going to happen here? Now, you're saying that these guns aren't as available now at Walmart and everywhere else as they used to be.
Well, I think that that's true, although some of the guns, you know, even though they may have the orange tip and so forth, you can paint those tips. And as a matter of fact, sometimes those tips have been painted and have been actually used in actual armed robberies by adults. But you're absolutely right. If someone were to point a gun at someone, especially in this day and age, and especially in a state where concealed carry is operational, anything can and could happen. And most school districts have a zero tolerance policy against any kind of weapons or anything that even appears to be a weapon.
Yeah. And how long have those policies been around, Bob?
Oh, those policies have been around at least, you know, 10, 20 years.
I think
long time.
You know of a case where a kid, didn't you tell a story once about a kid who brought in a pen knife to school that he had acquired when he was a Cub Scout? And what happened to him?
Well, in that particular case, it was an interesting one because a principal asked me about this. And this young man had brought in a little pen knife. It was probably a couple of inches long that he had actually been awarded as a Weeblo, which is a kind of Cub Scout. And so it was an award he got. And he brought it into school not to hurt anybody, but rather to show his friends. And the principal caught wind of this, and they had a zero tolerance policy, no weapons of any kind. And so he got suspended as a result of that. But she had enough sense to come to me and say, I didn't feel very good about that because his intention wasn't to hurt. He was just sharing. He was being a good kid. Yeah. But our policy is zero tolerance. I said, well, you know, in the future, a good zero tolerance policy is one where you have zero tolerance for the weapon, but then the response should be measured. In other words, if his intention wasn't to hurt someone, if he was a young kid, never had done this before, I probably would have given him the good talk and taken the weapon away and told him not to do that again, as opposed to suspending him. That didn't seem to serve a good purpose.
You know, Bob, you're talking about real weapons at schools. What about toy guns at schools? How are those handled?
Well, they're handled the same way, Steve. Generally, the public schools are so afraid, and I don't blame them, about weapons of any kind coming into school that even something that could look like a gun is seen as something that we don't want to have. So you're probably familiar with the case where some kids have had toast or some other piece of food that they were chewing into, and then all of a sudden it starts looking like a gun. They pick it up, and they start pointing it at somebody, and then all of a sudden they're thrown out of school. Or somebody just takes their finger and points it at somebody else and does the same thing. Yeah, schools do not want any of the even fantasy violence in schools. And you know, I kind of understand that because here's what happens. If you allow that to happen in school, then the schools are left with, so where is the cut point where we won't allow certain behaviors?
Mm-hmm.
So they say anything that looks like violent behavior, no go.
We're visiting with Bob Harrington. He's a professor over at KU. We're talking about kids and guns and how parents should approach the whole idea of kids playing cops and robbers and games like that. How appropriate is it? Does it lead to problems down the road? Did your young kids engage in gunplay? How did you handle that? Did you ever feel they crossed a line? How did you talk with them about it? And do you worry that gunplay encourages violence in developing children? Those are our questions on the table for our listeners. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at @KCURUpToDate. You know, what about, Bob, kids who live in families where they have access to real guns and ammunition? How difficult is it for a 5 or an 8-year-old to, you know, be able to distinguish between pretend and real, because there's an obvious concern over safety here, it seems to me?
Well, you know, that's where I think, once again, you have to get into the individual dynamics between parent and child. I'll give you another case, Steve. I was working with a dad. This was up in Montana. And he had a son who was prone towards some violence and would get into fights, kind of a bully. And he also, they lived out in the country. He raised chickens, which was a good activity for him. But the dad had a rifle that he allowed the child to use to chase away the coyotes and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have to remember, this kid was an angry kid. I just didn't think that was a very good approach to let him have access to that weapon when he was such an angry kid. Now, under other circumstances, a different kid, it might have been okay. I mean, I know in some of those towns that I've worked with up there, having a gun, for instance, and dads and sons and daughters and so forth going out hunting, that's pretty normal. And learning about gun safety and so forth, that's all pretty normal. And as a matter of fact, even having gun racks, believe it or not, at the high school and kids coming to high school with the gun rack and a fishing pole there too is somewhat normal. And I've even talked to superintendents about that. You allowed them, and they said, yeah, this is northern Montana. This is we have wildlife here, and this is what they enjoy, and we haven't had any problems with it.
Again, for parents out there, how do you handle your kids wanting to play with pretend guns and play around the house, play cops and robbers? How do you handle all of that? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us @KCUR UpToDate. I want to bring into our conversation Polly Prendergast. She's a director of the Berkeley Child and Family Development Center at UMKC, and she'll give us a look at how daycare centers deal with all of this. Polly, good morning. Nice to have you.
Hi, nice to talk to you again.
Well, I'm guessing that you run into situations like this all the time in a daycare center. How does the Berkeley Center approach this topic?
Well, it was really interesting. I enjoyed all the comments being made. And I think in early childhood programs, and I'm really looking or focusing at today, we're thinking about that preschool classroom, 3 to 5-year-olds or 2.5 to 4. This is such a complex dialogue. And I was glad to hear the zero tolerance come up. Not that I'm necessarily in support of that, but I think that every time there was a question asked, I was glad to hear we need to think about the perspective of where the child is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have, let's give several different scenarios. And I've pulled up some works of Dr. Lillian Katz and Teacher Tom, and just to kind of double reference, and which are the Dr. Lillian Katz article was in the New York Times, April 11th in 2000. But the point being, if you have children who, let's say you're in a rural area and you have children who live on a farm, and they're used to seeing, you're going to see guns on a farm, or you come from a big hunting family, the perspective that children are bringing into the classroom, play is how children make sense of their world. And we as teachers have to be very tuned in and not react in a over the top, I'm panicking, you're going to be a mass serial killer, but more of, tell me more about this. Figure out where the play is coming from. Engage the children in, well, let's talk about how we're going to play this game to where we're keeping all our friends safe. In one article I read, a teacher moved it from dramatic play into active play to her playground, and they had, you know, rules about we don't point anything at our friends, so this wouldn't be something we would point. But, you know, the game would turn into Star Wars play or this or that. What's interesting when you look at this is that using plastic guns, it's usually a puzzle piece or something from the block area. Maybe that child's family just sent someone off to the service, mm-hmm. and you brought that up. You could also be dealing with a core urban program, and gunfire may be something that's very real in that child's life. And so that's where it gets so complex, is that true early childhood teachers who really understand child development and how children make sense of their world through play then have to start thinking about questions that need to be brought forward, experts that may need to be brought in to answer questions. Where is this coming from? Is this a fear issue? Does this child need help or support? So it's such an complex piece. I mean, gunplay with young children has been going on since the beginning of time. And many times the more you try to, and I'm talking about the early childhood years, as we get older and into elementary school and so forth, the conceptual dialogue is going to be deeper and more thoughtful with the children. Well, with the young children, particularly when it turns into superhero play, it's all about power and good and bad. And do I have that power? And gosh, it could be something as simple as that child's family is, or not really simple isn't the right word, but that child's family is going through a divorce or there's been a death, something where traumatic.
What I'm wondering is, do kids just still go out and play cops and robbers and superheroes and shoot weapons at one another, you know, even if they aren't dealing with those kinds of issues at home? Because when I was a kid, every kid in the block did that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Children are now, whether or not they're still playing it in the old way of the cops and robbers, I don't see that as much. That does not mean that's not happening. But superhero play is normal part of child development. Mm-hmm. And we see it among boys and girls. Star Wars is always a favorite with the light guns. You know, mm-hmm. they like the light guns. But that, to try to say you're never going to have that type of play, is just a losing battle. You have to think more about how are we going to support the children's play in a safe way.
Yeah, there's a journalist, Heather Shoemaker, who wrote on HuffPost not very long ago just about this, and she said there's nothing wrong with kids wanting to play with toy guns at home, just for the reason you pointed out, Polly, which is this idea that when kids play those games or working out these morality tales of good and evil, you know, right and wrong, and power and protection, and exploring what's right and wrong, good and bad, is fundamental to developing morality, she says.
That's right.
That's something
right.
we want to encourage, not discourage, and you agree with that, it sounds like.
Absolutely, completely.
So when kids want to play even with toy guns at your school, Berkeley Child and Family Development Center, what do you do?
Well, I do want to say, you know, we don't have any plastic toy. I haven't seen a toy gun in years. It's funny, when you were bringing that up, I thought, you know, I don't think I've seen one in Walmart either. So we don't have the actual toy or play gun. If we see something come up, we see it a lot more usually actually in superhero play, and it's the Star Wars laser guns or the gun of pretend choice. It's usually more of a stick on the playground or a block from block area or a puzzle piece. And it changes to 15 different weapons many times in about, you know, 20 seconds. I don't want it to sound like we say, oh, that's great. We want to just have all the gunplay in the world that we can have. Mm-hmm. That's not what I'm saying. But we would figure out where the children are coming from, or is this more about superhero play, and do we have, you know, we've done topics where we've talked about superheroes that our moms and dads have, and because it's all about who has the power, right. Who's going to keep me safe, and we've changed it from dramatic play into active play, where we're saying, right. Why don't we save that for when we go outside onto the playground, and there's a lot of running involved. There's not just a one answer fits all,
right.
And that's where the complexity comes from, and you have to know you really have to know, what am I dealing with? And we've sent articles out to our families on Superhero Play so that we can read those articles and then dialogue about them as a group and get different opinions. That, to me, is a healthy way, because when we start shutting children down, we're not really figuring out where they're coming from and what they're thinking about, and that's when we start to get into troublesome areas.
Right. Well, Polly, thank you for that. I just want to bring Bob Harrington back into our conversation from KU. Bob, is there any question that in this day and age that boys still play rougher than girls? What's your sense? What are you seeing?
Well, I think that it's pretty clear that boys do play rougher than girls, although I will say girls can play rough, too. So if you're thinking about a girl who plays rough, that doesn't mean that that's way out of the norm. Boys, you know, when we think about even just problems in schools, boys are way more likely to be attention deficit disordered, way more likely to be oppositional defiant disordered, and way more likely to be conduct disordered. And all of those behaviors have to do with risk-taking, impetuousness, maybe playing a little rough, you know, and hyperactivity. So, you know, boys definitely do that. I think the biggest thing that we need to take away in all this is that, you know, boys, they will play rough. They may play violently, but it's about power. And power can be subjugated or sublimated for other means. So, in other words, you don't have to have a gun to have power. Mm-hmm. You can have power in the classroom by being a leader, by being a friend, by having good manners. So there's many ways in which you can step up and people can see, oh, wow, this guy's cool. This guy's got it together. And the more the teachers recognize positive power, we call that a replacement skill for what kids want to do otherwise, which is maybe wrest power from others through violence and so forth, and I'm in charge, the better we're at. So it's about really, in a preschool, changing the climate. And if you let kids set the climate, and I truly mean this, if you let kids set the climate in their classroom, I'm talking about what kind of rules do you want to have, guys? Yeah. What kind of a relationship do you want to have with other people? You know what you'll hear from them? And I've never failed on this. One, they want safety. They want to feel safe, because you, as a teacher, are operating in loco parentis. In other words, whatever mom and dad would want, hopefully that's you, what you would want as a teacher. So they want safety. They want the safety of home. Two, they want to feel cared for, and that's from the adults, but from other people there too. Three, they want respect, and it takes respect. You have to give respect in order to get respect. They want to feel emotionally safe. And this is where we get into issues of bullying, you know, and one form of bullying is physical bullying. And that could bring in the guns or the fake guns or the pushing and shoving and all of that. And that's about a power differential. Mm-hmm. And kids want to feel like, I'm safe here. But when they don't know how to deal with a bully, and the fact of the matter is if you don't know what to do with a bully, the most important thing you do with a bully is report the bully.
Yeah,
you report the bully to the teacher, and the teacher should do something about it. But you know what happens? 84% of the time, the research says, when kids report bullying to teachers, what happens? Nothing.
Huh. That's interesting.
Nothing.
That's interesting.
So kids are left to their own means, and so no wonder they go to more violent ends. And what you will find is that bullies, kids who have been bullied, become bullies. Because left to their own ends, they don't know what to do. And there's only three things you can do in response to bullying. One, you can become a victim, feel upset, get depressed, emotionally upset, maybe suicidal. Two, you can become a bully yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Or three, there's, you know, just let it go and just quit school. There have been kids who have quit school, who become truant and so forth. So those are the only three things. But the only one that really works, Steve, is reporting it. It's not your responsibility to keep yourself safe at school. And that's why, you know, going back to the zero tolerance, that's why schools are so strong on zero tolerance towards physical bullying, because They want kids to feel safe. And schools, you know, in fact, have been sued when kids aren't physically safe in school. And so they don't want to even go to that edge where they might not be physically safe in school.
Right.
And you know, there have been cases where kids have been told cyberbullying, why don't you just kill yourself? Well, you know, I think I mentioned earlier in prep for this program the issue of terroristic bullying. And terroristic bullying is where someone takes bullying from the schoolyard to the computer, and they get organized with other kids, and their intent is to hurt that other kid.
Yeah.
Now, you can hurt that kid emotionally, but you can also hurt that kid physically by all the suggestions that you may give that child. And we only have to look to Phoebe Prince a few years ago in East Sudbury, Massachusetts, who was an Irish immigrant who came into this country, who wanted to go to school. She was suffering from depression. The kids did not like her because she was beautiful. She was a cheerleader. She was, well, let's face it, she was dating the football star.
Quarterback, yeah.
Quarterback, exactly. And they were all jealous of her. She came in. What does she have a right to come in and do this? Well, they sent her tons of texts. Why don't you kill herself? Well, she killed herself. Well, the fact of the matter is that in the school's defense was, and still is, it's still in the courts, that, in fact, well, she was already depressive, and that was unfortunate.
Bob, let me sneak back in here. I want to get to some phone calls here before we go on too long.
Oh,
we're talking about kids and gunplay, playing with guns. How appropriate is that? Does it encourage violence in developing children or not? 816-235-2888 is our phone number, our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org. Let me go to some phone calls here and go to Evelyn from Kansas City, Missouri. Evelyn, good morning.
Good morning. Wonderful, wonderful program.
Thank you.
So 33 years ago, my time flies. I raised a young a child, and it was such a joy. I raised a nonviolent, non-racist, non-sexist. We never had any toy guns, not even a water pistol. It was not necessary. We had books, we had games, we had everything, educational, travels, and this and that.
Well, Evelyn, why wasn't it necessary? I mean, why not?
Because it was natural. Let's just say, when I look back now, it was the most natural thing to do. Because, you know, there is so much to see and do, and you have to, as a parent, monitor that. First of all, well, back then, TV was high up. There was no way that the child could control the TV, and it was easy. You have one child, you can do all that very easy. And so he became, you know, a big reader at age 5. He was already reading and everything, and the travels opened his eyes, and the theater, and you name it, everything. It was a joy. It was a wonderful raising. Today, 12 years ago, my son was accused of murdering someone, and he has served 12 years, falsely accused and wrongfully convicted. And as a parent, I just cannot believe that such a thing happened when we had such a wonderful. And he was also, I have to admit, we moved to Australia, and he was bullied because he liked reading. So then he was already looked at as a different child. He likes to read, and he's not like them, and swimming and
Evelyn,
all this
stuff. I'm sorry to hear about that. Let me just get a counter viewpoint here from Joe from Independence, who writes us this at UpToDate@kcur.org. I was a boy during the early 60s. We had hyper-realistic toy guns made by Mattel that had gunpowder caps and even shot plastic bullets. We had everything from cowboy six-shooters to fully automatic Tommy guns. I don't recall any mass shootings taking place during those years. We seem to have turned out just fine. Bob, I guess the yin and yang of this issue we're talking about today playing out right in front of us here.
Well, I think, you know, you're absolutely right. And I think the yin and the yang is the temperament, which is how you're born, your genetics, and so for your proclivities. And that's all genetics and biology. And then it's how you're raised, you know. And I think I agree in this sense that when I think back to those times, sometimes I think we think back to they were so idyllic, and they probably weren't quite as idyllic as we like to think. But, you know, there was Hopalong Cassidy and Roy Rogers and Gene Autry. But one of the things I remembered is that the Lone Ranger, or any of these cowboys, hardly ever shot their gun, and they prized the fact that they might shoot the gun out of the other person's hand but it was, I can't remember that they shot anybody.
Yeah, yeah.
So nobody got killed. It was really, these were superheroes that were fighting for, as they say, you know, justice, and always fighting for the underdog.
Right.
You know, and it wasn't about the violence.
Let me go back to our call here. Rebecca from Overland Park. Rebecca, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to make a comment. My son is 3, and I have a 3-year-old and 10-year-old twin nephews. And they are not. We do not buy them toy guns. They don't have toy guns or swords or knives. But in absence of that, they use a stick. They use a rock. They use whatever's around. Someone earlier had mentioned puzzle pieces. I have seen that 1,000 times with my nephews. A piece of the puzzle becomes the gun. And I just think that there needs to be a balance. I'm not going to buy my son guns. We don't keep them in the house. I don't want them anywhere near him in, you know, an actual gun. I'm not going to buy him a toy gun, but if I see him using a stick to shoot down the bad guys, I mean, it's kind of part of being a kid.
Yeah. Rebecca,
I'll take my comments off.
Yeah, thank you for the call. I appreciate it, Rebecca.
Steve, I'll just make a quick comment on that, and that was a very good insight on that nice lady's part. You know, there's research that suggests that if you try to raise kids in a neutral way with neutral types of toys, in other words, some toys that girls might appreciate, some toys that boys might appreciate, boys being maybe trucks, let's say, you know, I have 4 daughters. We did that. Okay. And we had trucks and we had front end loaders and blocks and all that stuff. And still, you know, there's research that says that kids, because you are not the only influence, there's TV, radio, and so forth, and other kids, they will gravitate towards some of these other things anyway. I mean, my kids back, they're old enough to have had the My Little Ponies.
Hey,
well, that's not something that, that's not something the boys would have been into. But that's just the...
Let me get Polly back in here. At the Berkeley Child and Family Development Center at UMKC, I mean, how much feedback from parents do you get, Polly, about what they expect, what kind of behavior they expect, and do they raise concerns about play guns specifically?
You know, at first, Bob, I wrote this quote. I'll have to use this again. I thought this was beautifully put. It's about the justice and not the violence. And that is the complexity of this dialogue that we're having. We actually, as a constructivist teaching program, really look at the democracy in the classroom. The children are a part of. I loved the piece where you talked about children want to feel safe, Bob, and you talked about really they need to be a part of the rulemaking. And those are all pieces of constructivist teaching. And you're looking at Piaget and Vygotsky, Dewey's work. But that is what's critical here. So I pulled up some families might want to Google Teacher Tom. He's great, and there's a lot of blogs on him, and he has a whole dialogue between a child and a teacher talking about just this, having the children come, you know, opening a dialogue. It seems like a lot of us are wanting to play like we're a superhero or use a weapon. You don't even have to use the word necessarily gun unless that's exactly what it always is, and letting the children talk and talk about the rules. And there's a wonderful one on here where the children come up with the rule that in that classroom, no guns because it scares them. And then that's something that you can document and hang on the classroom wall, and that's a different feel than don't talk about guns, no guns allowed. That's a panicked, that's not processing, that's not problem solving. It certainly doesn't make anyone feel safe. It makes people feel like there's something taboo.
We're going to leave our conversation right there. I've got to move on here. I want to thank KU's Bob Harrington and Polly Prendergast from the Berkeley Child and Family Development Center. Thank you both for your time today. I sure appreciate it.